Support for IPR comes from Orchestra Iowa, presenting the movie E.T., the extraterrestrial on the big screen, accompanied by the Symphony Orchestra performing the score live, May 3rd and 4th at 7:30 at the Paramount. Tickets at orchestraiowa.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from IPR News. I'm Charity Nebbe. There has never been a better time to make your home more energy efficient. Technology keeps getting better, and right now there are all kinds of incentive programs in place due to the Inflation Reduction Act. But how do you get started? Home improvement expert Bill McAnally is here to answer that question, and later in the hour he'll also answer your other home improvement questions at 866-780-9100. Hello, Bill.
Good morning, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here today.
And it's a pleasure.
We have talked about energy audits on the show in the past because you have been recommending that people get an energy audit for their home for many, many, many years. But right now it feels even more important. And for those of us who don't know anything about this, what is a home energy audit?
Well, you know, that's a good question because the energy audit, thank you, because that's why you asked me. That's right. It obviously is a good question. You know, energy audits and assessments are basically the same thing. But, you know, if you want to save some energy, you know, you have to know where to start. And the only real way to do this is to bring someone in that understands, you know, how a person lives, you know, what their goals are. Just saving energy is one thing. And sometimes you can get lured into that kind of a trap of just, what can I do to save energy? And in the past, especially, you know, in the 70s and 80s, we would do a lot of sealing up and just, we must have went, you know, through caulking by the train load back then. But we didn't understand how a house operates. We didn't understand building science, you know, moisture, ventilation. And in many cases, we'd save some energy, but then the house wasn't near as comfortable to live in. A lot of times it would be, you know, very clammy, a lot of moisture, a lot of condensation, things like that. So you want to bring someone in that understands, you know, how a house actually operates and how to do it safely. So, you know, a lot of times what you want to do is look up a couple of the best resources in Iowa is the Iowa Association for Energy Efficiency. The nice thing about their website, and I've been a member of theirs for many years, is you can go to their website and it will take you to all like the utility companies, all their rebates and all of their offers and sites of where you can get a hold of people that actually know how to do this, have the certifications, have the education to do the assessments, and they understand the big picture of, yes, we want to save energy, but the number one goal is to actually make the house healthier, you know, for yourself and the structure, but mostly for yourself. You know, a really good energy auditor or assessor, they'll go in and they'll just start, you know, pounding you with good questions of, you know, how do you, you know, are you shooting sparks in the winter? You know, are you just, you know, about knocking your dog over with those lightning bolts off your fingers? Do you have a lot of moisture coming on your windows? You know, does your bathroom mirror, does it, you know, stay dry or does it get real foggy as soon as you, even sometimes in many cases, just washing your hands or washing your teeth, in many cases, it'll fog the mirror up. And so they'll ask that and they always want to look at what your energy bills are. You know, they want to look at hopefully like a year's worth. So if you're going to do this, you know, first of all, find a good source and then have all that documentation there because trying to save energy, you know, a lot of times natural gas went way up. So we saw a big influx of these electric heaters coming in. You know, they're advertised all over the place on trying to save energy. But a good auditor will look at that and say, okay, yeah, your natural gas bill went down, but your electricity went sky high,
right?
You know, and it was only handling one room. And then they'll, you know, say, okay, what kind of a, you know, comfort do you have? Do you feel... healthier? Do you have, you know, more low grade fevers? And that, you know, it used to be a little easier before we had COVID and all these other things going on. But, you know, we really learned that, let's say, asthma was really, you know, a lot of times tied to indoor environment. And I really think that a lot of it is because we were making our homes tighter to save energy. But we forgot that big ticket item, not in cost, but in value, of ventilating your house correctly. The old term, build it right or build it tight and ventilate right has been around for years and years. And it always holds true. You want to be able to control the air. So to be able to control it and control the moisture in the house, you have to build it tight. And that's where the energy codes, you know, come into play for new homes and new additions.
But, of course, an energy audit is great for an older home.
And that's it. That's where they really are really good. And, you know, what I kind of look at is I've told people before, they say, I'm going to have this person come over. And a lot of times I know the person, which is kind of fun. And I'm lucky to know a lot of these people. I always say, ask them, are they going to do a blower door test where they pressurize the house and look for air leaks? And are they going to use an infrared camera? And are they going to use equipment to diagnose if you have elevated carbon monoxide? Are they going to recommend that you do a radon test? And then the key one is ask them if they're going to check the attic for asbestos before they do the blower door. Mm-hmm. Because and I've said this many times, is if you put a blower door on a house and you start to pressurize or depressurize, you know, there's a chance you can be moving some of the fibers that are in the attic into ductwork, because the ductwork in old days, you actually used to pull air out of the attic to a furnace, and that's in those older homes. Some of those chaseways or openings are still there. And so a good assessor has knowledge of history of how houses were built, say, in the 1900s and the 40s and 50s. And they know what to look for, those common, let's say, errors that we did in construction. So they'll do all of that. The big thing, you know, with today's technology is infrared cameras. And they are so helpful, because a friend of mine was just looking at a place, and it's not very old, and just he sent me some video of it, how these brand new windows, let's say the I think the house is only like 5 years old, were so leaky. I mean a big name. It's not like something you went out and bought at an auction somewhere. This is a big name window, and a stationary window besides, not one that operates, but just the amount of cold air coming in around that glass in that frame is just, we're shocked, you know. Mm. And so here was all this frost on the glass, and you immediately think, well, it's the heating and cooling system, and it may be part of it, but yet these windows should have been replaced, and they may end up being. But, you know, they'll look at all these little things. With an infrared camera, it's really cool, where they won't just look at the outside walls, they'll look at the interior walls and see if there's openings in the attic dropping cold air in, and they'll check and make sure that your heating and cooling equipment, you know, looks to be working well. They won't do any of that kind of work, but they'll make a recommendation.
So I want to ask you, I mean, you've definitely convinced me energy audits are the way to go. You mentioned the Iowa Association for Energy Efficiency. I live in a rural area. My REC, my Rural Electric Co-op, right, offers energy audits for your home. Mm-hmm. Is that a good place to start with,
yes,
your energy company?
Yeah, if you know that your local one does, because on that site, Association for Energy Efficiency, they list all the cooperatives and that, you know, who have it. But yeah, if you are in a cooperative, that's where you want to start first, because they'll have incentives a lot of times. But it's funny how you know, nothing against large power providers, but, you know, cooperatives are usually quite a bit smaller. And a lot of times you'll know the actual people that work at the cooperative. You know, you go to wrestling meets or track meets and stuff with them. And, they'll really be able to help you out. I mean, they really will. And they're looking at saving. You know, they don't want to have these high peaks in power either.
Right. It's not in their best interest.
No, it's not in their best interest. And in some places, like in Minnesota, the cooperative, you know, you're paying a certain amount of money per month for the power used, but then since they have to pay a lot to get it, you're paying an extra $150 a month, a fee on top of what you paid because they had a hard time getting the power. So, yeah,
well,
I think we want to eliminate that.
It's an important point, because a lot of us think, okay, we're paying them money, so are they the best source to give us this unbiased information? Mm-hmm. But you're saying that this is a relationship we can trust?
Yeah, it really is. You know, and that's one thing that, I mean, many, many years ago, you know, I was doing a lot of presentations for the cooperatives And we did some, I did a lot of work with Touchstone Energy, and they're just fantastic organization of people, and Alliant and Mid-American was doing all the, we were doing all these trainings and such. And that just really shocked me because I'm thinking, okay, they're here because they want to sell power, but they're also there because, yeah, they want to sell power, but it has to be in a way that you don't have those high spikes, that you can keep it at a normal pace where the company doesn't have to pay a whole lot to buy it from somewhere else or anything like that. And they realize in the long run, you know, we're all here together, and it doesn't help anybody to have these elevated bills just for profit. So, yeah, they really want to eliminate those highs and lows, because when they can predict, you know, how much they're going to use, it makes it so much better for everyone. They don't have to prep and put in extra, you know, extra equipment to handle these big things as well. So, right, they're in this for you as well. I mean, and it is hard to understand that sometimes.
So we only have about a minute left before we go to the break, and I think we'll talk more about this when we get back as well. But when you get an audit, you're going to get a whole lot of information.
Right.
I get the idea that that can be pretty overwhelming to know what to do with that. So you can give me 30 seconds of advice now on how to deal with that information.
The time constraint. Because a good auditor will tell you what to do with that information. You know, here's step one, here's step two, here's step three. And in many cases, you may look at it and go, wait a minute, I want to try to save some energy. But they may say, no, you have to do this ventilation thing first because you already have an environment here that's not the healthiest for you. Let's take care of this first, and then we can come back around the backside and then look at the energy side of it.
Okay. We will take a short break.
Okay.
We'll be back in just a moment. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today. We're talking about home energy audits, how to understand your home and how to use that information to help your home become more energy efficient and take advantage of some of the incentive programs in place right now. We'll also take your questions about any of the home improvement projects on your to-do list. You can call 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100, or you can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR comes from Orchestra Iowa, presenting the movie E.T., the extraterrestrial on the big screen, accompanied by the Symphony Orchestra performing the score live, May 3rd and 4th at 7:30 at the Paramount. Tickets at orchestraiowa.com.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Talk of Iowa from IPR News. I'm Charity Nebbe. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today. We've been talking about home energy audits, and we'll continue doing that. But you can also join the conversation with your questions about any of the home improvement projects on your to-do list. Give us a call, 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. We've got a couple lines open for you right now. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Bill, before we move on, I do want to talk about, all right, we started to get a little advice about how to work through the results that you'll get from a home energy audit. I also want to talk about the home energy rating system. That is, for short, it's called HERS. But tell me about that and why it's so useful.
Well, the home energy rating score is really useful for an existing home. Like, say, you know, you might request one if you're going to be buying a home, or a brand new home for comparison. Because what that will do is a HERS rater, they have different certification, but it's usually by, like ResNet, different groups that that certify, but usually it's a ResNet certifier, but that's a residential energy services network is what that actually means. It's a large group that certifies these people. But what they'll come in and do a blower door test, which pressurizes a house, and they'll be able to tell you where the leaks are, you know, how bad they are, how much you leak per cubic foot, a lot of different things like that. But the most important part is they will check your ductwork and your heating and cooling system. And when they check that, they'll be able to see, first of all, if you've got the right filter in there, the right size for the fan, things like that, but also how much, you know, air is going to each room, how it's supposed to be designed. They'll be able to tell you if that system is too big or too small, what the temperature is going to each one of those rooms. So if you have some comfort issues, you know, HERS Radar can, you know, usually figure this out for you. And so the biggest thing, though, is to me is they're checking for some things that really may stand out, a huge leak somewhere that you wouldn't have noticed that you can take care of and save a little bit of energy. But to make sure that your equipment and your ventilation systems are working correctly, because like bathroom fans, they'll call it a little duct blaster. It's a little hood they put over the fan, turn the fan on, and they'll be able to tell you, okay, if it's rated for 100 cubic feet per minute, how much is actually going out there? Well, it might be 20. And you go, well, why is that? No wonder the windows are foggy in here, because the person up in the attic doing the insulation stomped on the ductwork up there, and now the air is going through it. And you wouldn't know that unless you had it tested. And they'll be able to tell you, okay, is that enough airflow getting to the windows to keep them wind washed, to keep the frost off? So I really look at that as they'll be able to tell you, okay, how often should the ventilation system be on, and how is it, you know, controlled? That to me is, you know, that is something that should be required. A blower door test is required. A lot of builders don't do it. I don't know why, but it is required by code. But, you know, it just gives you that peace of mind that somebody has tested this equipment. I feel good with it, especially if it's a natural gas appliance. You know, if it's not operating correctly, maybe you could have some carbon monoxide issues. So it's just really good peace of mind. So that's why I really like them. Plus, it's a really good point when you're going to sell it. You have this HERS rating. It says how good your house performs.
All right. So it's a really easy way to understand.
Yes.
Fully understand.
Yeah. And the raters that I know are really big on the education side. They'll tell you, okay, this is what's going on. You know, they're not trying to sell you anything. That's the other thing. They're not, you need this piece of equipment here. No. They're just telling you, okay, what you have here, this is what you have to look for, and this is how it's working.
All right. Before we get to the phones, and you can join us, 866-780-9100. You've already mentioned the Iowa Association for Energy Efficiency as being a great online resource. I know you also want to talk about Iowa Green Streets, which we have talked about in the past,
yes,
but bears repeating.
Yes, it does, because Iowa Economic Development Authority, Jeff Geertz and Kevin Nordmeyer and a lot of other Iowans have been involved in this. And what this is it's a the Green Streets criteria is basically it's a document that if you're going to be working and doing work in Iowa, that if you're going to be getting funded federally or with state money, you have to follow, you know, these certain rules, high performance rules, you know, best practices rules, things like that, to be able, you know, to get the funds. But the best part of it is they've really made an awful good point of getting all that information and sources. So, you know, it just downloaded, it's free. And you'll look at all the different chapters, and they've always, at the end of the chapters, they've always put, okay, here's where you can go to get more information. So you're not spending all your time trying to find information. You know, I like to spend a lot of time looking for it, but other people have better things to do, I guess. And so, you know, it'll tell you where to go and what sites and what information to get, especially for us in Iowa. It's not something, this information is not coming from the Carolinas or Oregon or something. It's for us here in Iowa. And so we really need to utilize that source.
All right. I don't know why you want to do all your own research. That cuts into your Pinterest time.
Yeah, it does. I know. Yes. Go ahead. I bet I can't even go there now. So let's go.
866-780-9100. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Luann is on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Luann.
Hi.
Hi there.
I have a question. We had new windows installed in our condo. They did all the windows around, but they still seem cold. You know, they're supposed to be you know, they still feel like there's a draft coming in around them. Is that because of the insulation or
well, it can be. What you want to do is, first of all, I just asked him for a copy of the installation instructions for those windows. And if you, and if they won't give you one, if you know the brand, you can download those, find out how they were supposed to be installed, because there are quite a few builders around Iowa that don't seem to get to page two on the instructions, because I've always done it that way is the excuse I keep hearing on some projects. And that doesn't hold water anymore. So I would get a copy of those first. And if you actually feel air, I mean, windows can only do so much. So if you, you know, if you're in the room and you put your hand, like say an inch away from the glass, you're going to feel that because your hand is giving up warmth. It always goes from warm to cold, giving up warmth to that glass because it's cooler. But they may not have, they may have just used stuff, some insulation, fiberglass insulation or something that around the window and didn't air seal it. That window has to be air sealed correctly. And some manufacturers require a certain amount or certain steps to do that. Some require certain caulking. So get the installation instructions. And then, but if you can feel actual air, I mean, you can put you know, like you can use incense or something, you know, to see if it moves it. Then you've got to get that person back there. Because is it a window that operates like a casement window or a double hung that goes up and down, or is it just a?
Well, it goes up and down. Yeah, double casement.
Well,
they did all of the windows in the whole association. So.
Oh, okay. Did they do it
pretty much the same time?
Was it done real fast? I mean, it seemed like.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, you'll want to get the instructions, find out what brand it is, and then take something. Some you know you can find sometimes people that have a little smoke pencil that you know little tool that creates a little smoke, and you can see how much it works. Some will use matches. You know, I don't want to say that because I get myself in a lot of trouble. But if it's actual air, get them back because they're not installed correctly. You should not feel any actual airflow. But the window can only do so much. So you'll, in many cases, especially if you draw your blinds down, you'll have condensation, you know, in the mornings. But, yeah, you shouldn't feel any air. No.
Okay.
All right, Luann.
Thank you very much.
You bet.
Good luck. Thanks a lot for the call. 866-780-9100 is the number. Hayes is on the line next in Coon Rapids. Hi, Hayes.
Good morning.
Hi,
morning.
What's your question?
Hi, questions for Bill. I have a 1938 construction limestone house in Coon Rapids, and it's wonderfully efficient in the summer to cool and horrifically inefficient in the winter to warm.
Yeah.
The construction method of the time on the interior walls was concrete panels with expanded metal screwed to them and then plaster over. So pretty much the entirety of the interior of the house has never been touched for that reason. So I didn't know if there was any new technology or ways of improving the insulation in a house with that kind of construction without essentially tearing out all of the interior walls.
Yeah, and I'm sad to say, but you know, all the building scientists, especially in your case, one to look for, his name is John Straub, Straube. He's kind of the international expert on insulation and moisture in walls, like structural walls and stone walls and things like that. So if you go online and pull up any information, especially from buildingscience.com, on anything that John's done. He was here last year for a conference, really, really super nice guy. He, you know, when you look at it, when you really get down to it, and what he's come down to is basically the only way to really make it right is to insulate on the outside. Because we are learning, and we've learned in the past, you know, let's say yours is limestone, but let's say there's a brick wall. If we insulate on the inside, let's say you insulate it over the concrete panels and the plaster that's there to, you know, to raise the R value, then everything that's there now is on the cold side. And it was never meant to, you know, never meant to be going through those super cold cycles. That's the one thing about limestone, especially, it's very porous. And if we start getting moisture in it and it doesn't have a chance in the winter to warm up like it does, because you're heating it up from the inside, thank you very much. You're heating that, you know, stone up to keep it from freezing. That we have in the past seen people bring up, you know, photos and diagrams of, you know, how that just decays that structure. And it's just like when you see sometimes in houses or old buildings where the brick is, the face is broken off of the brick because the moisture got trapped in it and that frost broke it. So, you know, technically what almost all of them are saying, do it on the outside. You can do it on the inside, but you're taking some chances. And the downside is that home looks gorgeous, I'm sure, from the outside. And then you've lost that look. And that's pretty much what everybody does. And they have to make a judgment call. Do I want the character or do I want to pay, you know, the energy bills? It's kind of...
Could he put up tapestries like in an old castle? Would that, that fix the problem, Bill?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, bet. Yeah, King Arthur tapestry.
Right.
So, yeah, yeah, you bet. Walk around, you know, some shining armor and everything. Heated though, because it's going to be awful cold.
Right, right.
Yeah, you know, that's the bad news is yeah, you can go ahead and insulate on the interior, but... To keep the building healthy, you would want to do it on the outside. And the other good thing about it is if you did it on the outside, you don't have to mess around with any of your trim work or anything on the inside. You know, you're not having, you know, people ruin your lifestyle because they're inside tearing things apart and creating all that dust from, you know, 1938. And I'm sorry to say that, but I would research a lot of the information that he has online.
Thank you for the information and the lead. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks. Sorry.
Thanks a lot for the call, Hayes. 866-780-9100 is the number. Randy's on the line in Brooklyn. Hi, Randy.
Hey there.
Hi, what's your question?
We bought a house that was built in 64. For a heater, a furnace. So we can get some rebates on it.
Okay.
I'm going to give us a good estimate on what else we need to do.
So you're asking if you could do an energy audit on a house built in 64. Is that what you're asking, Randy?
Or somebody do it for me.
Okay.
Yeah, sure. And, you know, if you can go to your cooperative or your utility company, you can check with them first, like Charity brought up earlier, or go to the Association for Energy Efficiency website and, you know, see what groups there can help you. Actually, the Iowa Green Corps, based out of University of Northern Iowa, I believe they're still doing the audits as well. So you can check with University of Northern Iowa on that. But
that's Green Iowa AmeriCorps. You can find them online. Yeah,
there you go. Thank you. Wow, that was pretty fast. You must have that right there in front of you.
I'm familiar.
You're quick. So, you know, I would do that because you know, if especially 64, is it a ranch style house?
Oh, hang on.
We still there? Well, I can tell you.
Is it a ranch-style house, Randy?
Correct.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm familiar with that because my dad built one in 62, and we were notorious back then that we didn't have near enough insulation in the walls. We didn't understand vapor, and so I don't know if you get this, but we always had every spring, we had moisture dripping down into the ceiling on our house because there was so much warm moist air getting in the attic that would condense on the nails from the shingles, and you'd look up in the attic and look like mothballs everywhere. Mm. And so we were, though that 60s period was pretty, you know, sketchy on our building method. So, yeah, it'd be really good to have somebody come in now.
All right, Randy, thanks so much for the call. 866-780-9100 is the number. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Lynn in Iowa City asks, should we insulate the ductwork in our unfinished basement?
In your unfinished basement? Well, no, because you still want to keep that heated in the basement. You'd be, you know, what would happen then is First of all, you're going to have to bring in a heating and cooling person to take a look at it to see if, you know, this is even possible in your home, depending on how your ductwork is done. What you don't want to do is start creating these huge different thermals where the basement is so much colder than upstairs, because especially if it's a leaky home, the cold air from outside will come in and even make it colder. And then that pushes warmer, more buoyant air up, and so you could have some comfort issues. In many cases, it's just if you just want to, you know, insulate the walls in the basement would be a much better idea. One of the things we're seeing, though, is do not use these blankets. I call them diapers. They're an agricultural blanket. Insulation blanket they use on pole barns. You see them even on brand new houses because technically they meet the code, which is bad. But they're just a white vinyl bag of insulation that hangs over your walls. It's fast. It's fairly inexpensive, but then you get moisture behind it, and then you get all kinds of issues going on with biologicals. I can't say what it really is, so I have to say biologicals now, growing behind the insulation and that plastic. So don't go the cheap route. Take a look at the green screen criteria, like I mentioned earlier, and it'll show you exactly how to do the basements in Iowa, the safe way to do it.
All right. Thanks so much for the question, Lynn. We are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here with us today, and you can join the conversation with your questions. Call us, 866-780-9100, or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org, 866-780-9100, or talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Talk of Iowa from IPR News. I'm Charity Nebbe. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today. He is ready and willing to answer your questions about any of the home improvement projects on your to-do list. Call us, 866-780-9100. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Let's get to the phones. Carl is on the line in Boone County. Hi, Carl.
Hello.
Hello.
What's your question?
Yes. Okay, we put new windows in our ranch house this summer. We bought them from a lumber yard, and they came and measured and sent the order in. Finally, the windows came. Well, when they came, the windows all had maps on them of showing what the appropriate zone was for the construction.
Uh-oh.
Okay.
Yeah. And, I know where this is going.
Showed, you know where this is going.
Yep.
The map showed for Missouri and on south. Hang on a sec.
Yeah.
And I asked them about that, and they said, well, let's check. And they had the right zip code, but they just claimed they put the wrong maps on there. But how could they have built the exact size? You know, what's that sound like to you? Did they not build them the right specs for Iowa?
Well, it was that Energy Star map, yeah. Wasn't it? And so
yeah,
it was rated for Energy Star. Yeah, I've seen. I was involved in one like that once too. and I didn't even notice it till they were in. I mean, you know, you assume, and that was my mistake. I assumed, like you know, you are, that the right window is coming in. So what I would do if I were you is I'd get a hold of the manufacturer, and ask them. Don't ask the lumber yard yet. You know, I don't know them. They might get a little bit, you know, uppity about it. But I would, I'd get a hold of the manufacturer and say, okay, I'm in this zip code. Why did these windows come rated? But the biggest thing, though, is that U value that's on there as well. So hopefully the U value on that sticker is like 26 or lower, hopefully. I don't
okay.
know. But you do want to ask that manufacturer because they could have been ordered incorrectly. And I would, you know, if they were, then you'll have to work out some sort of settlement with that lumberyard. Say, this isn't what I ordered. You know, this is obviously my zip code,
yep.
but these don't match. So, yeah, you know, you might you may have a little tussle there. You might. But get with the manufacturer
no,
first.
No problems with problems with the lumberyard. They're great.
Oh, but, good. Okay.
Okay.
Well, it might have been on the other end. And
so
I'm sorry.
Would it be just, would the window frames be okay? They just didn't make enough thickness and, you know, between the glass, something like that?
Well, you know, and they may, that's the thing with the manufacturer, they may send you, you know, a stamp to an engineer's stamp or something like that, that they do work in your climate, in your zip code. And, you know, sometimes it may just be a marketing issue because I don't know how they're built. They might be the exact same window with a different sticker. You know, you just never know. Okay. I'm trying to be nice.
You value less than 26.
Well, yeah, a lot of them are 28, you know, the 26, the lower, the better. You know, you can ask the lumberyard what they ordered because they'll be the ones that'll, you know, say what they ordered too.
I already asked them, and they said they ordered the right stuff. It's whether the company built them right or not.
There you go. Well, then you can, so you and the lumberyard can get on them then, right?
Okay. All right. Thanks for your time.
Hey, you bet.
Thanks a lot for the call, Carl. Next up, Jean in Earlham. Hi, Jean.
Good morning.
Hi, what's your question?
2 years ago, we had a kitchen addition built, and we had the entire floor replaced, and rather than break out the old floor, they laid the new floor on top. Our dishwasher hasn't worked since December 17th. We finally have the flooring people are coming tomorrow they have to actually rip out the old floor because when they made the floor so high, it trapped the dishwasher under the countertop.
Okay.
So we have these guys coming. We have the dishwasher guy coming to repair it. But you know, so the dishwasher is going to have a problem again, let's say 3 years from now. Is there some way that we don't have to go through having the floor ripped out to get the dishwasher out? Is there some way that the flooring can be put down that isn't quite so dramatic to get the dishwasher out again?
Well,
I'm just sorry, Gene.
You know, and it's... I'd really like to say what I want to say, but the first person should have realized, you know, hey, when I put this extra thickness, you can't get the dishwasher out. I'm sorry, but that right there is too bad because every time you add, it's going to make it worse. And the only thing is, I don't know if some of these dishwasher manufacturers have a shortened one. You know, they got a little bit of flex at the very top where they're attached to the countertop. There's these two little straps usually that screw to the countertop to keep it from falling, you know, when you open the door to the dishwasher, so it keeps it from falling onto the floor. And I don't know how much flex room you have at the top to raise that, and maybe the adjustment feet that are on it, maybe those can be pulled off and use some sort of another shim, something the manufacturer would be okay. The only other thing that I can think of is, boy, you know, I wish that other floor could just get torn out, brought down to the right level. And I'm sure you can't just raise the countertop. That's the only other thing you could do. But that would be a nightmare unless you're going to replace the countertops.
They're like 2 years old.
Okay. Yeah. Somebody's going to have to be thinking out of the box here and try to get real creative on how to change that height on that dishwasher, because whoever put the floor in the very beginning should have ripped it all out so that when you add additional floors, that dishwasher can still slide in and out. The bad thing is, too, is every time you raise that, there's less room on that toe kick area where your toes go underneath. And there are certain, and I'm telling you this from experience, there are certain boots that get stuck under that toe kick. And when you try to move to your right, you just end up falling over because your boots are stuck.
I think that's actually the least of Gene's concerns.
I know
today,
it is, but it happened at a hardware store in Fort Dodge, and it was supremely embarrassing. But, you know, that's the problem is whoever put that in should have really looked at that. Me personally, I'd actually be asking, you know, hey, you know, I think you need to chip in here a little bit and pay for this. We have to figure this out. Maybe the manufacturer, like I said, has one that's a little shorter. That's a sticky issue there. I'm sorry that's happening.
So there's no temporary, well, not temporary, but way that the floor could be stuck down, and then if it needs to be worked on again or replaced, it's not as dramatic as actually tearing out the floor.
What kind of floor are you putting down?
It's luxury vinyl plank, and it was new when we did the
construction,
so it's just too big.
Oh, okay. So it's the click together.
The guys could have been.
As long as it's not glued down, you can pull those off. Yeah. Yep. If it's the kind I'm thinking about, a lot of them can be. So especially if they put them in a certain direction, start from one side of the room instead of going to the other, it's easier to unlock them and pull those out. Yes. I'm glad we got that cleared up, because if it's the click together kind, you can pull those out.
All right.
Undo them.
So you have an emergency escape.
Yep.
Well, good luck, Gene. Thanks so much for the call. 866-780-9100 is the number. Mary in Altoona says, we're considering installing a Generac, I don't know if I'm saying that correctly, but that's the brand name, generator, which will hook up to our LP tank and provide electricity when the power goes out. We narrowly missed derechos twice, but this is a large expense, and we'd love to hear your thoughts on whether or not we should do it.
I like the idea myself. In fact, in my place up in Minnesota, I've done the same thing as when I was last there, the power went out three times because the power pole's fallen down and things like that and snow. So I have a backup propane, which I just slapped myself, but it's a direct vent sealed combustion Vermont castings stove that's propane so there's no inside combustion, anything mixing gases or anything like that. But that particular one runs off of a little battery that'll kick it on. If I didn't have that system and I was really worried about power going off for a long, long time, I would put in a Generac or a brand similar to that. Generac advertises a ton. I see them all over the place. And I may end up doing that same thing. I just don't have enough experience as to how often the power goes off because, you know, to me, and a lot of times, a couple times of losing power, losing what you have in your freezer, I know insurance still covers all that stuff, but still, you know, you're losing the control that you have in your house as far as comfort. And especially, like I say, the freezer and refrigerator. I really like having that backup system. I do. And it doesn't have to have a large, you know, propane tank there, because usually it's not going to run very long. So in some cases on a house, they'll put a 100 or a 200 gallon unit or pound unit. And, you know, usually you pay about $200 a year rental fee on the tank and whatever you use. So it's good peace of mind. I see a lot of people doing this system like that.
Right.
The big key though sometimes is you really want to make sure this is not a do it yourself deal here. This is where you have to have the professionals be doing all the work.
All right. Thanks for the question. Let's go to Melanie on the phone in Wellman. Hi, Melanie.
Hi.
Hi.
Morning, you guys.
Morning.
So my question has to do with a roof problem. About 7 years ago, we did a build out on a pole barn on a property that I use as a workspace, and the roof has always leaked. Not so much during the summertime, but this time of year when things are freezing and thawing, I have kind of leaks all over, and I'm curious if you have any thoughts on that. I've had the installer back, and he's a reputable guy. He did replace some of the screws.
on the metal roof, thinking that the gaskets were failing and that was allowing water to come in.
Okay.
But I'm curious why it happens during the freeze and thaw cycle, more so than, say, a thunderstorm.
Is it, can you see the metal from underside? I mean, when you're in a pole barn, or is there a ceiling in there that hides it?
There's a ceiling. It's a new metal roof on the outside, and we actually recycled the original metal and used that on the inside. It's a vaulted ceiling.
Okay.
And so we have the old rusty metal on the inside, but it's really well insulated between with fiberglass insulation.
Okay. Yeah, that may be it right there. What we've really learned is, especially fiberglass insulation, is very porous. You know, it's basically the same thing as a furnace filter. If there's any air leaks whatsoever in the area below your metal ceiling, if there's any air leaks whatsoever, and I mean any little hole or anything, that warm air is going to go up and go through the fiberglass like it's not even there. And it rises just like a balloon. It's just going to go up, and the first cold surface it's going to hit is that metal roof. And it's going to condense, and you're going to have a tremendous amount of moisture issues for the life of the structure, unless you stop the air leaks let the air from getting into that attic. If you add ventilation, like a power vent, you can make it even worse. So what you need to do is seal up every hole that is potentially letting air go up. And that's actually what the codes, they require a leak-proof, an airtight ceiling. And it goes to the same thing as for you. If any warm air can get up there, it will. And I've done it in the past. I mean, I've looked at infrared pictures of what I did back in the 70s, and it looks like you're in Yellowstone looking at all these thermals going up, because I had fiberglass insulation in there, and the warm air was going up like crazy and then condensing on the bottom of the roof deck, and it was just pure white, like the inside of a freezer. So, yeah, that's what you're going to have to do, is you're going to have to just stop the air leaks. I commend the guy for, you know, thinking, okay, maybe it's something I did, but it, you know, with the screws and that. But it's usually is because you've got that warm air going in and condensing. So you're going to have someone seal all the holes wherever they are, even where wires go up. And then you use an infrared camera. Somebody's usually got one. You can buy them online for like 200 and some bucks to put on your phone as well, if it's worth it to you. But that's probably what it is.
All right, Melanie, thanks so much for the call. And we have just a couple minutes left to see if we can get through some email questions. Margaret says, we are preparing a rental house to sell. A smoker lives there and is moving out. What is the best paint or procedure to use to get rid of the smoke odor?
You know, I really don't know. That's something you'd have to look up. But the one thing I do know that does work, and I don't know if you can in your case, is cinnamon. We used to scatter that in rooms that where they had an actual fire, apartments where the walls were just black. And so this is when I was pretty new to the business, and I started laughing when this older guy says, yeah, just take a buy a huge barrel of it. I mean, you know, it was like a 25-gallon barrel of it, and you scattered this all over on the floor, and then we put new sheeting over the top of it, and I can't believe it. I mean, I'm just saying this is how it worked back then. Huh. You could go in the next week, couldn't smell a thing, and I just couldn't believe it. But, I would go to, a professional like these renovation people, and they'll sell you the right products. But it did work. It did work for us.
All right. Not the answer I expected.
No, it wasn't.
All right. And with 1 minute left, Laura in Dubuque says, I'm curious if a continuous fan is a good idea in the basement to prevent mold. I've heard both ways, that moving air prevents mold from settling or it spreads it around.
It can spread it around. You need to get rid of the source. You need to get rid of the moisture, and have an HVAC person come down there and try to control the humidity that's there already. And a lot of times what does work, and we found in the past, is having a radon system put in, and because that will depressurize your basement and pull the excess moisture vapor from around the foundation and dries the basement down. So that is another possible way of handling that.
All right. Bill McAnally, thank you so much.
Thanks, Jerry.
our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, today. And you can find out a little bit more information about some of the links that he was mentioning earlier in the hour. We'll be posting information on this conversation on our website, iowapublicradio.org. And he was talking about Iowa Green Streets. You can find that online in the Iowa Association for Energy Efficiency. Talk of Iowa is a production of IPR News. The show is produced by Danny Gear, Caitlin Troutman, and Samantha McIntosh. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. You never need to miss an episode of Talk of Iowa. You can subscribe to our podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Talk of Iowa. This is Talk of Iowa. I'm Charity Nebbie.